We have to create the right vibe, you know, the energy, and everybody at the organization has to feel so privileged to be here. It's no other way.
Thanks for listening to the Purely Arsenal podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at Purely Arsenal FP for all the latest Arsenal podcasts.
Welcome to another edition of a Purely Arsenal sit-down podcast, and I'm joined by my regular Neil Shah to discuss a 5-0 thumping of Sheffield United. How are you, Neil?
Yeah, not bad, thank you, Jack. How are you doing?
Very good after that result, mate. Very good. I have to say, it's been a pretty good weekend for us. Could have been better today. Yesterday for you with the results, you know, but you can't rely on Manchester United, can you? Let's be honest.
Oh, no.
absolutely pathetic. And frustrating with me is, you know, if it's us, they put their lives on the line, won't they?
Yeah.
Lives on the line. They go up against their local rivals and they're happy to roll over. It's incredible to me. I'm watching it. I'm going, they really didn't put up much of a fight at all, did they? And I don't think City have had an easier day at Old Trafford, sadly. But that is quite. I mean, it's funny in that sense for Man U, because they do have a bunch of real scummy players. So you know, there's always a bright side to it. But it's early days. I think I expect City to win most games, especially the way Man United are. They're in a terrible state at the moment, so it's probably a good time to play them. So I didn't expect too much. But better things to talk about in our game, I think. Sheffield United, mate, we had a really tough game in midweek. So although Sheffield United are a poor side at this point in time, and you expect to go into that game and win it, I think a lot of us were going into this game thinking, oh, please just be a comfortable, resounding victory. And that's pretty much what we got. Neil, if we talk a little bit about the lineup, he made more changes than I thought he would. Did he make more than you thought he would? I just wonder what your thoughts were on the changes. Just as a reminder, Kiwiorka obviously came in for Gabriel. Odegaard was fully rested. Some people were saying he was dropped. I was like, no, he wasn't. He was fully rested. And it was pretty much Havertz that kind of took that role, but Smith Rowe took the eight role, or they kind of interchanged, and Rice sat in behind. And then obviously Eddie continued to play up top, which he has done a lot in the Premier League this season. How did you feel about how we looked going into the game? Do you have any worries, concerns? Did you like it?
Yeah, first shot. I wasn't expecting that many changes. Obviously, we knew about Jesus, so Eddie was given. I didn't think he was going to do anything different other than put Eddie in there for a little while. I was speaking to you guys and thinking, would he potentially try Trossard, Martinelli, Saka up front, but we always thought, no, it's going to be Eddie, isn't it? And well, as it transpired, that ended up being a masterstroke, didn't it? I was surprised but happy seeing Kiwior. I didn't quite understand why Gabriel was dropped, but it could be because he's just resting and rotating, which actually, again, another one that worked out well, because I thought Kiwior looked really good. I thought he looked very, very solid, and he's shown glimpses of what he could be and his potential when he has come on before. So again, I thought that was another good one. The Odegaard one, now that you're saying it, I actually thought he had been dropped or at least changed around, because he hadn't played so well in the last couple of games. And I thought maybe he was just going to give him a rest, a bit like what he'd done with Saka, for a while. And well, Saka was also a little bit of an injury, wasn't it? But I just feel that maybe that was his reasoning. But yeah, if you think that it was more of a case of just giving him the rest, that's fair enough. And look, it just goes to show the depth that we have. Now, we wouldn't have no way been able to do maybe one or two changes, but not like this, and do it in a way that the levels don't drop so much, which is so good to see for us, and which we need, of course, given the way things are going for us, in the sense that it looks like we're, you know, potentially we could be competing on three or four fronts. So we're going to need that squad depth for sure. So I don't think it was changes which meant a big drop in levels, but it kept us you know, there and thereabouts. And of course, you know, again, it's Sheffield United, and I'm not saying that with any disrespect, but I'm not so sure he would have been so bold if we were playing maybe a tougher opponent, or if it had been Sheffield United away, maybe it may not have been so drastic. But the one that still, I mean, I know that you'd probably say to me, well, it's that way he's going to do that, and I agree with you. But I was just thinking, because it was against his old team as well, that maybe he might try Ramsdale for this game, but it didn't come. So I was thinking, wow, he's sticking with Raya, and that just makes a big statement to me. I think we know where it was going now for Ramsdale, given what he's doing, and probably holding him for, or keeping him for the game against West Ham. So overall, I wasn't too displeased, and I think the change is done pretty well for me. Emil Smith-Rowe, of course, starting, which I was happy about. I'm not saying that he had the best of games, but at least he's getting a chance and he's being considered. So that was encouraging. So yeah, happy overall, Jack, to be fair.
Yeah, and he's getting match fit. I mean, I don't think we would have done anything close to this last season, to be honest, at this stage. You know, and I think it's kind of twofold. I think he realises he needs to believe in the squad more, because I think that cost us last season. Because when injuries inevitably do happen, we had players coming in that were cold, or perhaps that weren't of the quality that he felt, you know. So then you really saw the drop off. He obviously saw this as a perfect game to use some of those players that he probably knows he's going to need at some stage this season, whether it's January when the international pick up again, or just because injuries seem to happen. And we've had a lot of injuries now. I mean, we haven't discussed the Seville game, which was a fantastic win for us. Really good win, really good performance against a solid European side, I would say, and one that does pretty well in Europe, whether it's Europa League or whatnot. They do. They definitely have some European pedigree beyond what we do, to be honest. And we looked really good. But again, you know, we lose Jesus in that game. We lose Thomas Partey before that game once again. He's not even come back, but he's out again. And the time frame for both are pretty vague. But I mean, if you look at this season, we have lost a lot of players with niggling injuries or bigger injuries like Urien Timber. And last season we didn't have any of that going on, really early doors. He was able to play the first 11 constantly. We had no real midweek games to worry about, ones where he had to play the first team at least. So he had so many opportunities, but I just think, yeah, he's used players there in this game that he thinks maybe he may need to use. I found the Havertz at the right eight, if you like, quite interesting. Whether you want to call it that, the kind of the Odegaard role, I guess. I don't know if you saw him in a different position as the game went on, but I found that quite interesting. I had this feeling or slight hope before this game that he may be a sort of wondered about the midfield experiment with Havertz and whether it was time to move on from that. He clearly still wants to persist with that. And so if you can hear my child crying in the background, I think my wife's gonna get. But I just wondered if you had any thoughts on that. I want to get to the positives. I want to talk about Eddie, but the Havertz one for me in midfield, I still don't think it's really working. I don't think this game convinced me otherwise. Not that he was bad, I just find he doesn't offer a lot in terms of going forward and the way he progresses the ball. I'm starting to think he might be his best option might be as an alternative nine, to be honest. But that's kind of what I thought we bought him for initially. I do find it quite interesting that he's decided to spend 65 million after having Xhaka there for so long and basically being quite frustrated with Xhaka, right? He came out and said like a year ago that he kind of gave Xhaka an ultimatum that he needed to change what he was doing from the eight. I just found it quite interesting that he decided to buy a left eight that hadn't played there for 3 years and use that money that way. It's quite a bold move. Where are you at with the midfield and have it? So you like me and quite impatient with it? Or are you willing to see it ride out and see how Arteta does it, because he's kind of earned that trust from all of us?
It's a difficult one, and I think I completely get where the argument for being impatient has come from, or comes from, of course. You expect a player by now who's had Premier League experience already. It's not like he's come from overseas and has to take that time to adjust the pace and the vigours and the understanding of how the Prem works. He's already been there with Chelsea. So, you know, it doesn't make sense that why is it taking so long for the lad to settle in or find his feet in a position that he might have been brought in for. I think I didn't really see much of Elsa. I don't know if you did, but I didn't see. I tended to see him more on the right hand side from memory. The bits when I picked up on him, I did look at him and see what he was doing. For example, there was a couple of one on ones which I thought he was a lot stronger with. There's a couple of off the ball movements in play that he did to help his other players to get into right positions and collect the ball. You know, he was a little bit better than before. I'm not saying he was outstanding. That's the thing. Whatever he's done hasn't been out of this world. I mean, there's been times where he's been in position and he's done things more recently where you think, that's not bad. He didn't have a bad game, but it's just been at that level for me. He hasn't like been, oh my God, look at it. Yeah, he was great for that layoff for the Martinelli goal a few games ago where Tomiyasu headed it down. He was good for a couple of other games, I think it was, where we thought that was a much better or improved performance. But he isn't at the moment at the point where you think, wow, now we know why Arteta's brought him in. I haven't had that wow factor from him yet. However, I still got some faith in him, Jack, whether it's misguided, whether it's delusional. I just feel there may still be something with him, but I don't know where. That's my thing. I don't know what position it will be in. Now, obviously, when he played in the nine against City in the Community Shield, was it? I thought he had a much better game.
And it was actually in the nine that he came on against City, kind of, when he came on and laid off Martinelli.
Right. So you think that, why isn't he sticking with that that role? So there is that. But I think you're right. I think because Arteta can be still a little bit stubborn about things. And if he's thinking, I brought him in for a midfield position, that is exactly where I'm going to make him play. Yeah. And that is exactly where I want him to excel. I think, look, I'm probably just making excuses with this. But we still haven't lost a game. We've only lost the one, haven't we, against Lons. We're still, you know, up there in the table, and it's not a catastrophe yet. It's not like, I know it was in the beginning where we were struggling and he was doing all this experimentation that I didn't agree with. No, that was wrong. And especially if it was for trying to bed him into the team, that was wrong. I did not like it. I think I was quite vocal about it in the beginning, and I think you guys were too. You know, not playing Gabriel, having a party player, this inverted right back, absolutely nonsense and ludicrous. If that was all to help Havertz settle in, that's ridiculous. However, if he doesn't do that anymore, I don't mind sticking with him. But again, I don't know whether he should be a starter. I keep saying this. I think he should be coming on as a sub, giving him a chance. If then it doesn't work out, say by, I don't know, January or December even, then maybe we need to address it more seriously. But the thing is, with Arteta, it ain't going to change, is he? He's not going to.
I don't think he's going to. But what is impressive, I mean, you say that, but since he made the error against Man United where Rashford scored, he's not played in another really big game for us. I mean, he hasn't started Chelsea, City, Tottenham. He didn't start any of those games. So he's obviously seen that it's not working, whether he says it or not. He's seen that it's not working. I think the frustration for a lot of us is that left eight position is kind of unidentified. I don't know if that's the right word, but it's not. None of us really know how we're going to approach each game. I'm sure if Thomas Partey was fit ever, it would be a little bit easier for us, and we just kind of see Declan Rice there. But as you saw in this game, as we sort of get onto the game a little bit, Declan Rice, you can play him in the six or the eight, and he pretty much comes out as looking as the best player on the pitch, really, or one of. And that's the versatility that you've got with him. I think he's got a lot of potential in the left eight position, Declan Rice, to be honest. I mean, you've seen him already turn up with some goals, and he's mostly played in the six. But I think you've also seen that he's got quite a lot of potential going forward, just because he can cover a lot of ground. I think he's quite good when he gets to the box, and he actually looks a little bit more natural than Kai Havertz to me in that position, which is kind of crazy to think. But it'll be interesting. We do have other options at the left eight, Smith Rowe being one of them, Vieira possibly being another one who's kind of sort of fallen down the pecking order a little bit. But in this game, I mean, they sat so deep. Well, I guess we should expect them to. I think there was a stat going around that said we face the lowest block teams out of everyone in the league more than Man City. I'm not sure what the level was, but that's saying something if we're facing teams that are even a lower block than us, lower block than City do. And that's probably, you know, a sign of how good we are becoming in terms of our system. But it did feel a little bit static, a little bit subdued early on. And I'm sure, like you, I was getting a little bit frustrated. But the team doesn't appear to be near. We as fans, especially in league games at the moment, because there's so little room for error, I think I don't know about you, but I'm sitting there from minute one and I'm frustrated. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm sitting there and I'm going, oh, come on, we've got to get a goal. You know, like that kind of thing. And it's unlike last season where it was all new and fresh and you were so excited, you were riding the crest of the wave. This season, there's always this weight of expectancy, despite the fact we're knowing we're going up against the likes of City. And it does feel that way, doesn't it? It's like, you know, you take this huge sort of sigh of relief if you get the first goal and you can kind of relax a little bit. And it came what, around 30th minute-ish. But before that, we hadn't really created a ton, though completely dominant. But again, it's Declan Rice, mate, that picks the hole. But we do have to talk about him, but we also have to talk about Eddie Nketiah, who ended up, and me and you would probably be the most critical of Eddie Nketiah on this podcast. I'm sure James is upset that he's missing this one, because he would have been able to throw it right into our faces and us eat a big giant slice of humble pie. But he was rightly man of the match, and it was a perfect striker's hat trick. And just talk me through the first one and his performance now.
Yeah, I do feel sorry for James not being here, because this was made for him, this podcast. Tailor made. He could have just sat here and just spoke about Eddie for an hour and a half, and it would have been, that's it, perfect. I completely take the humble pie, the egg on the face, 100% all day long. And I don't mind it. I love it when players prove any of us wrong. Because at the end of the day, Jack, what do we want? We want the best for the club, don't we? We want the best for the players that play for the club. So I welcome it. So I'm take it with arms wide open. He was magnificent. He really was. I don't think I've seen a better Eddie performance. And I'm not just saying that because he scored the three goals. He looked different. He's taken on the responsibility. He did it well last season, where we thought, oh my God, we've lost Jesus. Because that's the first time we felt that. We knew that, or, you know, had that experience with Jesus's injuries, and we were thinking, oh my God, he's been playing so well, what are we going to do now? And then we've got Eddie, and he did all right, didn't he? He didn't do bad. He kept us going, kept the momentum flowing. And again, it happens, we're thinking, because I thought after that spell when he was covering for Jesus last season, going a little bit further forward in the season, I started thinking, oh, same old Eddie again. He started dropping off. He started becoming a bit indifferent. So then this season, my expectation, or when it happened now, after the game against Sevilla, I thought, oh no, it's Eddie. We've got to rely on him. But to be honest, he was magnificent. He looked, Jack, I don't know about you, but he looked like he'd been playing for a long time, banging in goals week in, week out. He looked so comfortable and so assured. It was fantastic. And look, even just the first goal, I mean, all three, I might go out on a limb here and say a little bit something controversial. I think that was one of the best Arsenal hat-tricks I've seen. If you take all three goals and what he had to do in each of them, I know this is blasphemy, but I was almost thinking, I remember that hat-trick that Bergkamp scored against Leicester. I'm not comparing the two, but I'm saying they were all such different goals, but with different attributes of the player's skill and what you saw of them. I thought it was brilliant. And the first one, oh yeah, Declan Rice, what a ball through. Let's not forget that, but that's what he does. And Declan Rice, I think you touched on it earlier, he does not put any a foot wrong really in games. He hardly ever makes any mistakes. And when he goes into tackles, they're quite, you know, harsh tackles, but they're accurate. That's what I love about him. He's so damn accurate with what he does. hardly puts a foot wrong, and you can always rely on him to break up play, retrieve the ball. He's just fantastic. But that was a great ball. But it's Eddie's first touch that really was that made that goal. It was so well done. I think he took it on his instep or something. I don't know how he did it, but he'd done something really nicely. Very, very, very classy the way he did it. And then even the finish was so assured and so kind of, you know, authoritative and just full of confidence. It just looked like a confident striker's goal. Brilliant. And that set the tone. I mean, after that, second, it's chalk and cheese. We were brilliant after that in the second half. But it was the first goal that really, really set us in motion. And I'm so pleased for him, Jack. I can't tell you. Magnificent stuff, the first goal. Well, you're mute. Jack, you're mute.
Sorry. Spoiled my child. It's going to make some noise. I completely forgot. That's what I want. I mean, we both want Eddie to do really well. We want everyone to do really well. But we've been critical of Eddie. I've been critical of Eddie personally, because if he doesn't score, I find, you know, his link-up play has got so much better, but it's not at the level of Jesus's, where he kind of connects the front four. Jesus is just the glue. You saw it against Seville just with a turn. I don't have to mention anything else, but, you know, and just an unbelievable match-winning performance from Jesus midweek as well. And then it's the unfortunate thing with Jesus is you know when you've got him back to form, and every time he seems to do that, he seems to pick up something. And that's the frustration. Whereas Eddie, in fairness to Eddie, I mean, touch wood, he's pretty robust for the amount of games that he plays, isn't he? I mean, I think he started maybe 8 or 9 of our 10 Premier League games this season. So, you know, no one would have bet on that pre-season. Not a chance. And I think that's 5 goals now, maybe, in the Prem. So you can't really argue with his stats. You're right, the first goal was great. I'm not sure many players we have kind of played that ball that Rice does, because it's not really on. He kind of goes through a player to make that ball. But it's Rice just taking a chance to do something different, because it felt like at that point we were doing a lot of the sort of U-shaped passing stuff. And, but it's great from Eddie. You know, it's a fantastic first touch to get away. I think it's from Trusty, actually. And I think it is where... And put it in the back of the net. And just from that point onwards, he never looked back. And we need it. We need him to be... He's the next in line for sure. I know we talk about Havertz as this sort of number 9 opportunity, but next in line for Arteta, no question. So we need, you know, if we needed anyone to score a hat-trick in this game, absolutely Eddie, with the likes of Jesus being out. But I didn't expect it. And the reason, going back to it, the reason is I don't feel his link-up so good. So I want him to be more clinical. And people say, well, why don't you want that from Jesus? Because he offers so much, Jesus. You almost allow him the lack of clinical ability in front of goal, because you're like, yeah, it's frustrating, but he does so much for the team. We're so much better with this guy in the team. And you don't feel that necessarily with Eddie, so you want him to be clinical. And I think that's where sometimes I've been a little bit frustrated with him. I thought he's not been as clinical when he's had big chances. But in this game, absolutely fantastic. You know, and the first goal was terrific. And then I think you and me and everyone, because they really weren't getting out of their own half, and we were so good at winning the ball back. I actually relaxed a lot after that first goal, and I probably wouldn't have done against another team. You know, usually it takes a few for me, but I think the team did as well when you started to see us pop the ball off a little bit more. I think Zinchenko won't get a lot of plaudits, but I do think in that first sort of 30, 45 minutes, he was the one that was really trying to sort of pick the lock, I felt. And I know there's a lot of debate about Zinchenko, Tomiyasu, and, you know, should he be starting as much Zinchenko? But I think he showed he's still so valuable to us, especially in games like this, which there are quite a few of. Maybe not to this extent where we have 70% of the ball and we win 5-0 and create, you know, a ton of chances. But there's a lot of games, Neil, that we play where teams do not want to come out whatsoever, especially until we've scored. And that I think Zinchenko is pretty key to that. You know, I mean, he finds himself in the number 10 position most of the time in this game. And not just that, he's oftentimes trying to get on the end of things. There was 2 or 3 times before we scored that I remember Zinchenko being the furthest man forward. And, you know, he couldn't get to the final ball. And I was like, oh, it was a great run by Zinchenko, though. You know, we were saying on the text thread, great, well, look at him running to the box, taking those chances, willing to do that. And in this is the sort of game you want to do that, because you've got the coverage behind and, you know, there's less likelihood, at least, that they can hurt you. But Neil, just to, before we get to any second and third, the defensive capabilities of our team. I mean, I know it's just Sheffield United, but I do think this season we've seen a collective ability to concede less chances as a total. I think we're second less goals conceded, least goals conceded. I think we've conceded 9 in 10, is it? But it's not really about the goals so much at this point. It's more about the amount of chances we give up, you know. I felt last season for a large period of time, probably post-Saliba in fairness, but for a large period of time, we just were conceded far too many chances. And that eventually catches up with you, and it did. We ended up conceding 40-plus goals, and there's a lot of data out there to say you're not winning the league by doing that. I think City only conceded like 33 or something like that. So I just wonder what your thoughts are on that. Do you think it's as simple as Saliba's back? Obviously, it helps very much that Rice is sitting in front of him. Or do you think system-wise, we've done something a little bit different to navigate ourselves away from... Because we used to get broken on very easily, you know, one or two splitting passes after giving the ball away. Doesn't feel we're quite that vulnerable at this stage or so far this season.
Yeah, I think it's a combination. I think Saliba, of course, monumental. I will say that he's a big component on the fact that we are a lot better. I think Gabriel works very well with Saliba. I think aerially, we were getting caught up with the high balls a lot. If everyone else, we were thinking that's one of our only Achilles heels when it comes to our defending. I think that we're sorted out. I think we're dealing with anything like that in a much better way. We seem to be more or better equipped in dealing with those scenarios now. You know, we've got the flexibility of, and this is the irony, isn't it? We bought Timber in to be, you know, probably a revelation or a really good signing. Unfortunately, he's got an injured literally from the get-go. But actually, we haven't done bad. Initially, again, we mentioned it earlier in the pod about this leaving Gabriel out. That's a definite no. You don't do that. Gabriel and Saliba have got an amazing partnership together. I would suggest that they are probably the best centre-back pairing at the moment in the Prem. I don't know if you agree or disagree with that, Jay, but I think they're amazing together.
I agree, yeah.
And then you've got, haven't seen much of him, but we saw Kibior. I thought he was outstanding, Jack. I thought he was solid, didn't really do much wrong. He's a great, an option to change if Gabriel ever does need a rest. I think he's fantastic. And I think you've been saying that he's going to become a really, really good player for us. And he will.
We're going to need him, aren't we, in January now?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah. 100%. That's the thing, isn't it? It's January, and then you've got all the players going off the African Nations and the Asia Cup and whatnot, and you're thinking, oh, God. So we're going to need him, and I think he's going to be fantastic. Don't feel that we're going to have a drop-off again. Another area where potentially... Well, we had, who did we have last season? We had the likes of, again, no disrespect, but we had the likes of Holding. And, you know, now we don't have to feel that anxiety or concern that if one of our top two or any one of our defenders falls on the wayside, what do we have to come in? I think we've got the courage. But the more importantly than that, especially with Tomiyasu being the beast, he's even better than when he first came along. So when he first came along, we all loved him. We thought, wow, this is a great, great option. Now I think he's even better. I think he's improved as a player. And he's got versatility about him. Even Ben White has. Ben White can play centre. He can play the right-back position. Tomiyasu can play left or right-back. I think he wouldn't even be bad as a centre-back as well. We've got Kiwior. You know, there's so many options. So we're not going to – I don't think the impact of Timber's absence is as profound as it could have been. I think defensively we're a lot more better. We're a really good unit, and I think it is a combination of Saliba and the fact that we've got options, and I think that they're just playing really good together. I think they're really playing well, and we're going to be a hard team to break down. And you're right, last season, you're not going to win the league conceding 40 goals plus. You're not. It's just not going to happen. You know, they always say a good championship-winning team is defined not only by its scoring abilities and its attacking prowess, it's defined by its defence and with a good goalkeeper as well. So, you know, obviously we've got two options with goalkeepers. We've got the defence as good as they're playing. I think it's looking good, Jack.
Yeah, on the goalkeeper, I did feel like it was a, a game that Raya kind of needed. Maybe that's why he kept him in. You know, he needed a game like this. I think he has the, you know, the most clean sheets in the league now, David Raya, and he didn't start the first three, so that's something. He didn't have anything to do, but his distribution I thought was very good. He made a couple of long balls. I remember one to Martinelli in the first half that was a terrific ball. So hopefully, you know, this builds, is because we had a big debate, didn't we, on Raya last week, and we need him to be our number one. We need him to show that he is a level up, because he's going to be picked by Mikel Arteta. So we really need to support that. Well, and believe that he's going to be. I think he's got, you know, bags of potential, and I think he could be really good for us. So what that means for Ramsdale, maybe as January approaches, we may have to discuss that again. But I do think Ramsdale will get the start of midweek, that's for sure. And, you know, I think there's a Brentford game against in November. But beyond that, I'm not really seeing the minutes for him. He seems to be completely back in David Raya here, as you expect once he came in. You know, I don't see the benefit to flipping now. For Ramsdale, I see it. But for Raya, if you flip out of him now in the Premier League, I know he's not, he is our player, though, I think. I know the loan stuff, but I think we signed him. So I think for him, it kills the purchase of it. It says, you know, I don't know where you go from there, because all this rotation stuff, I just never believed it, really. You never seen it with a number one goalkeeper. So for me, I'm like, as much as it hurts Ramsdale now, once you'd made that decision to bring Raya in, I'm struggling to see how he reverts from that. Unless, of course, there's the opportunity, unless it gets to the point where it's, you know, we have to make the change. He's making big errors. And I think some people argued maybe we got to that point yet. Obviously, you saw the punch against Seville, which was very lucky from his side, to be fair, which was frustrating because I think he'd had a good game up until that point, to be honest. I do. I thought he had handling. He had made a couple of terrific saves in that game against Seville. So it's an interesting one. It's a very interesting one. But I think, you know, it's tough on Ramsdale. It's ruthless from Arteta, to be fair. Very, very ruthless. But nothing surprises me with him. He is an absolute ruthless psycho, as I always say. He's a loony. But he does it for the benefit of the team, then he does it for the benefit of the team. But yeah, Neil, so we're 1-0 up, I think, come half-time. And then second half, again, lovely sort of striker poacher's goal from Eddie into the top corner. Not an easy finish, to be honest. Their goalkeeper, don't know what he's doing. Flapping all over the place. Hilarious it was. And then, but the third is the pick of the bunch. And the third is surprising. I mean, if anyone's, I don't really recall Eddie scoring a goal outside of the box, let alone a goal like that. And lovely for Smith Rowe to get on the end of an assist there. Felt, to be honest, from my perspective, Smith Rowe and Havertz felt a little bit on the fringes of everything that was going on. But I do think these minutes would have done Smith Rowe the world of good, far more than what it would have Havertz probably. And maybe we see the benefits of that in midweek. Who knows? Because when was the last time you got to give Smith Rowe 90 or close to 90 minutes? I mean, just hasn't happened. So he probably would be exhausted, but he would have benefited a lot from that game. But just touch on the second and thirds, Neil, from Eddie. It was really good to see Saka sort of handing the ball as well and things like that. Just a brilliant day for Eddie.
Absolutely magnificent, wasn't it? So the second one, again, different skill, but still, that was more Eddie, wasn't it? That was his fox in the box, being there at the right place at the right time, an error from the goalkeeper. I think it was a corner from Saka, wasn't it? Yeah, it was a corner from Saka.
Yes.
So kind of an assist, I suppose, to get Saka's numbers going, keep them going. But yeah, just there at the right time. But it still was a difficult execution. It wasn't the easiest of tap-ins, but he just blasted it, didn't he, right into the right spot. Perfect. Couldn't be happier for him. But it just goes to show that I think you're absolutely right. What you were saying earlier about you need him because he hasn't got the same attributes as Jesus has got, which is fine. You know, everyone's different. All players are different, aren't they? Even if they play in the same positions or shared positions, they've got different things. So I think you're right that where what he might lack in certain things that Jesus does without having to score, if he's the one that can put the ball in the net consistently, that's fine. It's all we want, isn't it, at the end of the day? But it took it so well. And And I think that just fueled his confidence even more. I think the first goal gave him that edge. This one, it was brilliant because I think would he have been able to do what he did the third? I don't know if he would have, if he was, hadn't done the first, got the first two goals, if that makes sense. It just excelled his confidence or increased his confidence for me. And that showed in the third goal. Please for Smith Rowe. I think you're spot on about Havertz and Smith Rowe. They were there, thereabouts, doing some great things, good things, but not outstanding. Not the kind of things that we came to, you know, become familiar with, especially with Smith Rowe, what he used to do, what we're expecting Havertz to do. But, you know, you're right. I think the minutes would have done Smith Rowe a lot of good because he hasn't had the opportunity. And I think, I'm hoping that he gets more of them, Jack. I really believe in the player. I know there's a talk or an inkling that he might go as a way or paving a route for another player to come in. But I love the kid so much. I think he's got bags of potential. I'd be devastated for him to leave the club. So I was glad that he was given time, and he needs the time to bed in again and do what he used to do. But anyway, moving on from there, the third goal was fantastic. So I was sitting kind of behind the nets on the other side, and all we saw was this arrow, this shot just curling to the corner. And again, it was one of those moments that initially the crowd were like gasping. It literally was like, whoa. And then the eruption of noise. It was incredible. And then we were just waiting for it to come on the replay because we didn't get that view, side on view, if you like. Oh, what a goal. What a brilliant goal. And it was just perfectly executed. There was no goalkeeper was going to save that. It just curled slightly. It just was beautifully delivered. Oh, I'm so pleased for him. And then the fact that, you know, that gesture that he got the captain's armband as well. And he made good use of it, especially at the end where, sorry if I'm playing a bit forward, but he was like pushing, like Odegaard did. Who was it with that? One of the academy players. Yeah, Havertz, wasn't it? Yeah, and the academy player, wasn't it, I think? Or the reserve player. Pushing them forward, saying, look, you take some...
Oh, sorry, the penalty. I thought you meant for the penalty. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Do you remember?
Wanyeri, yeah. Yes, it might have been Sago Jr. this season at Brentford, yeah.
That's it, that's the one. And it was very akin to that. And he did that for Tommy S, saying, you know, go, you know, you deserve it. That was nice. And that shows me that Nketiah, he's shown, I've seen him in a different light, Jack. I've seen him in a different light. I'm well prepared to take all the criticism and say, yeah, you say he's this and he's that. No, good. I'm pleased for him. A brilliant hat trick. Fantastic hat trick. Couldn't ask for more. And look how unselfish he was not taking that penalty. If we are going to talk about it quickly. The fact that he said, he went on air afterwards in an interview, and he actually said, it's because Vieira's expecting a little one, and it was the best, it was a nice gesture and thing to do. And he's saying it so selflessly that he was willing to give up a record equaling third player for Arsenal after Henry and Arshavin to score four goals in the Prem. He's willing to give that up to say, look, Vieira. And that tells me a lot about what Arteta has done with the culture of the club. It's fantastic. Brilliant stuff.
Yeah, no, and you can't underestimate a striker in form that's scoring goals. So, you know, when I saw it, I was like, this is a huge benefit to the team because Mikel Arteta has huge faith in him, and I've never doubted that. And I've also never doubted sort of Eddie's desire or work rate or, you know, I think he got criticised in midweek for that, actually, which was quite interesting. He got criticised for being a bit clumsy, but also not giving the energy that he typically does. And I felt when I saw those criticisms, I was like, actually, that's quite rare for Eddie to see those sort of criticisms. Usually it's about the quality on the ball. Oh, he was loose with it. He didn't connect us as well. He was on the fringes. But not rarely is it effort or desire and work rate. I don't really see that a lot from Eddie. I feel like he gives almost too much sometimes. That's why he falls into these challenges. He wants it too much. But with that goal, that was, you're right, completely right. If he hadn't scored the other two, I'm not sure he takes that shot. Well, maybe he does, because we saw it against Chelsea on his weaker foot last week, and we all went mental about it. But but he doesn't. He certainly doesn't take it on with that sort of connection, that sort of ability to be lethal. And it just as soon as he took it, you knew it was going in. But it was a fantastic strike, rounded off a perfect performance for him. Absolutely man of the match, deserving of it. And just to go back on Smith Rowe, they were on the fringes. They had the least touches in the game, Havertz and Smith Rowe, other than Saka, who was also a little bit quiet for Saka, and he has been since he's come back from injury, and that's something to sort of keep an eye on a little bit, because we want him to get up to form. I don't have any concerns on him, just like I don't on Odegaard, because you've just seen it too often, but definitely want them to come into form, you know. But yeah, at that point, brilliant. Got the penalty on Vieira. I think we could have had a penalty on Eddie before it, to be honest. I haven't watched it back again, but I think it might have been. I think it might have been trusty on that one too. And they got a little bit lucky. But this one, it was actually a terrible tackle. I don't know why it took them so long to review it. Maybe it was because it was on the line. But the fact the ref missed the foul in the first place is a bit worrying. He was watching right over him, studs down the back of the Achilles. It's a terrible tackle, to be honest. He ended up booking him, in fairness, which he could have just given the penalty. So I guess that's something. But yeah, lovely to see Vieira. Odd, interesting for me. I would have personally preferred to see Vieira in the Odegaard role. I think he's the most natural successor to Odegaard's position. Left-footed, likes to be on the ball a lot, creative. I think, you know, I always see sort of Smith Rowe as that sort of potential left eight, but Vieira is that potential, you know, 10, if you like, if Odegaard is out. I don't really see the attributes from Havertz, to be honest, Neil. That's why I find it quite interesting. You know, I don't see, he's not a high touch. Odegaard's probably one of our highest touch players, always on the ball, always wants the ball. Havertz is the opposite, really. He likes to get on the end of things, so he doesn't really want the ball at his feet that much. He often plays the way he's facing, plays a little bit safe, and it might be something to do with his confidence. I'm not too sure with that, but yeah, interesting. But like you said, he's going to persist with the Havertz thing, but I think I'm starting to believe that I'm not certain he's going to persist with him in the midfield from the start, at least. And that creates opportunity for Smith Rowe, you know. The left eight is a big sort of talking point at Arsenal at this, and he's definitely one of the, he can put his name in that. He has a big performance on Wednesday, Neil. If Smith Rowe goes out there and has a big performance on Wednesday, gets a goal, starts showing, you know, sort of 21-22 form, you're suddenly going, maybe we start him in a Premier League game again. You know, that's where we're at, I think, with the left eight. It's very open, especially with Thomas Partey being out. It's very, very open, you know. So it's quite interesting. But great to get Odegaard full 90 rest, Gabriel full 90 rest, and one or two others, some less minutes. Got to take Saka off early, 70th minute. That's rare, you know. All this stuff I was watching going, yeah, as much as we started so good last season, I don't recall any of this happening at any point. I don't recall any, and being able to still win comfortably, you know, that I don't recall it. And I think he's learning. He's learning how to rotate. He's learning how to protect the players a little bit more. And to be honest, I mean, Partey injured, but you can't blame the manager on Thomas Partey's injuries anymore. You just can't. He didn't even play him. You know, away at Chelsea and home to City, everyone was going, where's Thomas Partey? Then he gets injured anyway. Well, my rule on Thomas Partey is it doesn't matter how much or how little you play him. He's going to get injured anyway. It's inevitable. Sadly, he's in the Kieran Tierney stage, you know, where, and I just feel Arteta was probably looking at him going, you're not in my plans anyway, because I can't rely upon you. So I'm not going to rush you back. Because I can't think of how to fit you in at this point, because I don't know if you're going to see through the game or pop out of the game or whatever. So I think it's becoming harder and harder for us to plan, with the thought of Thomas Partey being a part of things. My rule, as I was saying before he got injured, I was like, if he is truly fit, play him whenever you want, for how long you want, or for how little you want, because he will get injured anyway. That seems to be his Arsenal career. He just seems to get it. And it's the worry with him is it's all similar stuff. It's the groin, it's the muscle strains everywhere. Groin, quad. They say it's different, but they're all similar injuries. We don't see it. You know, Aaron Ramsey went through this and he never really recovered from it. And I don't think Thomas Partey is either. If we can get him back for his usual 25 games a season, I think we'll be delighted this season because he's barely played already. So that would mean, you know, we'd get him back for a big chunk of it. And he is still so, so good when he's fit. But like, you just can't rely upon him physically, you know. And you know Mikel Arteta, once he can't, he ends up just shunning him anyway. You know, if he can't rely on him physically, he just, you know, look how long it's taken Smith Rowe to just sort of, he just thought, I don't know what I can trust your body to give me, you know. He doesn't love people being injured on a regular basis, which is fair enough, I guess, especially when it doesn't seem like it's anything to do with specifically what we've done with him. But Tomiyasu's goal, Neil, obviously not skipping too much over Vieira's penalty. It was a lovely penalty. Great to see him get another goal this season. But Tomiyasu's first goal, I didn't realise his mother had passed away. He'd kept that. I mean, not that he has to say anything about it, but I was quite, you know, sort of, you know, choked up for him, to be honest, when I saw his post, because I was like, well, he's not said a word about that, has he? But he topped off a fantastic week. He was the man of the match in midweek for me. I know Rice was excellent again, but for me, Tomiyasu was unbelievable in midweek. He's now put himself in a serious conversation to say he should be a starter in the first 11. And I think he is a starter in the first 11. I think he'll start him against Newcastle, which makes it quite interesting for what he does with him in midweek. I expect he plays at centre back to save his legs a little bit. That's what I think. I get the feeling we might play him at centre back and like push Kibior out left back or something like that. But I think we did do that at Brentford. I could be wrong, but what's your thought? What a great week for Tomiyasu. And I think you mentioned him earlier in the podcast, but he is someone we really need something from now this season with the Timber absence, isn't he?
Yeah, 100%. It kind of softens the blow of Timber's absence for me. If we didn't have a Tomiyasu and what happened to Timber, then we're like, oh, maybe a little bit short. And obviously he's given us not just the cover, but options. And you just summed it up perfectly there. You know, end of the day, now we could potentially play him on both Wednesday and against Newcastle. I think you're right. I think we need to. Newcastle's going to be a tough, tough game with an oppressive crowd. You know, they're expecting a lot now, obviously, because, you know, they're potentially going to become a super club, aren't they? So they've got a lot of expectation riding on them with the fans. So if they're going to give us hell, you know we can expect hell next week on the weekend. So I think you're right. I think he will play midweek and against Newcastle. I think he's a better option for Newcastle than maybe Zinchenko, because obviously he's got the defensive capabilities. But there's no question. I think Zinchenko admits it himself that, look, defensive-wise, Tomiyasu is always going to be the better option. And I think it's a good shout that he plays in the centre on Wednesday to give his legs a bit of a rest. And Kiwior's more than capable. This is what's so great about our defensive players. We can just swap and change. We can shuffle them. It's fantastic. And I think just going ahead and looking at Newcastle, White, Gabriel, Saliba, Tomiyasu. Oh, sorry. Potentially we could play all four of them. What a default. They're units, aren't they? All four of them.
And they, sorry to interrupt. Newcastle, I think they're the top scorers in the league, Newcastle, so far this season. And they are one of the top creators as well, maybe even the top. So I think it's, you know, as long as barring any fitness issues, I think you're right, Neil. I think that's what he goes with.
Yeah, brilliant. So, and I'm so pleased for him. He was man of the match for me. I think, Rice was great, but
midweek,
Tomiyasu was, oh, what a player. And he's so happy. We know he scored that goal. You could see what it meant to him. He's one of the few now left, isn't he, that hasn't scored. I don't know who's left now in the defensive lot, but I think most of them have now netted.
Yeah, Kivior has, I don't believe. But he's not played much, so yeah, Tomiyasu's had a fair amount of games.
I think it will come if he gets a run. But I think at the moment he is just going to be a...
Oh no, Kivior has scored.
Has he?
He scored against Wolves last season. He scored against the last game of the season against Wolves. I'm almost certain he scored similarly from a corner. With his weaker foot. Okay. I'm almost certain. Oh, I'm looking it up. Carry on speaking. Okay, almost certain. Kivior did score. I'm almost certain he did. I remember watching it back and thinking that was a bit of a dodgy goal, but Yeah, he got one goal in the Prem last season.
Oh, well, there you go then. So,
there
so,
we go. It is Tommy Asik. Probably,
but he just saw his face, didn't you? Lit up. And I think that was a nice reward for his efforts in the last few days. I wasn't expecting it. I wasn't expecting these levels from Tommy, I've got to admit. I mean, I know he's good. And I know that, you know, after his injuries, he was looking a lot better. I didn't know about his mum. I really didn't know that. And that really resonates with me, you know, the relationship that I've got with my mother. And my God, I didn't know that. So if that's giving him a cause, if you like, to do well and make her proud, you know, that, I'm so pleased for him. I'm so, so pleased for him on that level. And he just seems like a really nice guy. Do you remember the game that we did, we lose, or was it the Lions game? But he came out and he, you know, berated himself. Not many players do that. He said, you know, I should have done better for that goal. It's because of me and that goal. You know, we was it the Lions? Which game was it?
Yeah, no, you're right. It was the Lions game. And I think what he was saying was, because obviously it wasn't the goal that we conceded. It was that he had a really good shot from a corner and the keeper blocked
it. Oh, that's it.
And he said, I should have scored. And he was very harsh on himself. Yeah, which is... Very self, you know, self-critical, but yeah.
It shows me that he's a really nice guy. He's very humble. He's not one of these extroverts, if you like, seeking attention. He's keeping out of the limelight a little bit, and that's, you know, hence the reason why Nketiah was saying, no, you go, you know, get the reception from the fans. You know, you deserve it. And I that tells me a lot about the character of the player, and I love it. I love it. I love people like that. I just think that's nice. He's very grounded, and the way he carries himself with a lot of humility for me. Mm. But he's not letting that disrupt his performances as a player. As a player, he's very bold, and I just love that about him. He's great, and a wonderful asset for us. We're so, so pleased for him, Jack. Honestly. I think we've got a really good squad. I think we've got, you know, we've got a little bit of fine tuning still to do. You know, we've got the Saka cover, if you like. I still believe that to be Nelson, but you know, I think you might have other ideas. We might need to look at externally. We've got potentially, if Eddie, it remains to be seen now how Eddie gets on. If he starts banging in goals week in, week out, we might have our answer for our cover, for not only for cover for Jesus, but, you know, an option for an out-and-out striker, potentially. But it just remains to be seen. I hope it does work now. I'm backing Eddie. I love the fact that I loved his attitude. I think he took the captain's role on really well. You know, albeit for 10, 15 minutes. A great day all round.
Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah, it was really nice to see the players sort of push Tomiyasu and you know, get surround him. They obviously, you know, really respect what he can do for the team and him as a person. And I think Arteta said that. He said everyone loves him, you know, just loves him being about the place. And Arteta's waxed lyrical, really, about him this season. And he is our best one-on-one defender in the fullback areas, without doubt. He's better than Zinchenko. He's better than White. You want to shut down a player. You put Tomiyasu on the pitch, and 9 times out of 10 he'll do it. He's just so good one on one, so good one on one. I think, and you know, against Chelsea we were off a little bit, 2-0 down. He came on, Sterling. You never saw him again, and he was trouble in the first half. Sterling, and he just shut it down. You know, there was a point where Sterling was trying to turn him. And he just stepped in front, right in front of him, and Sterling was like, you know, didn't know where he came from. But he's really good. And I think what gets underestimated is his ability on the ball. I think he gets a little bit underestimated as this sort of shut down defender. I think he's a little bit underestimated on the ball. I think he can do a bit on the ball. He gets forward well. You saw it for the City goal. You've seen it. I think he's quite comfortable on the ball. He's two footed, which is really not that common from those sort of positions. I like him a lot. I really do. And the weird thing with Tomiyasu is when he came in, and he was a revelation, he came in as a right back, but now I'd almost rather watch him anywhere else but right back. I'd go left back, and if we lost one of our centre backs, I'd probably go centre back. So what I said, I think Mike, or maybe it was James, asked me about January window. I said, if we get someone defensively because we're going to be short, which because Tomiyasu's going to, I would look at a right back because I'm quite comfortable on the left. And you know, Timber is probably going to play more on the left back as well, the way we started in the season. So we're strong there. It's the right back that, or the right centre back, because Saliba and you don't really have direct coverage. You push White in, so it would be like right centre back, right back that I would look at, which is quite interesting, really. That's the area that of depth that I probably worry about a little bit more. But all of his games recently, I've watched him. I've felt like he's been way more comfortable on the left, and looked really, really solid at centre back against Brentford and for his national team, obviously. But no, overall a terrific performance. Eddie was one of very, you know, many good performances. I thought Rice was fantastic. The centre back pairing, again, like you said, they didn't have a lot to do, but just they're so smooth on it. I thought Martinelli as well. I felt this against Chelsea, actually. I don't think he really got any plaudits because we were so poor when he was on the pitch, but I felt Martinelli was the main one really trying to do stuff. And again, in midweek, Martinelli was fantastic, wasn't he, with that finish and the pace he has to run away from people. He allows us to play a counter game, Martinelli. Saw him go down in this game with an ankle issue. He kind of rolled over on it, but then continued, didn't he? We really need him for games like Newcastle, because they will attack us. They won't sit back in like a Sheffield United. And hopefully there will be opportunities, and he is our breakaway opportunity. You know, we need one more like that, really, to be honest, but he is our elite speed on the break, if you like. And he's so important, Martinelli, so fantastic. But Neil, a fantastic win, 5-0. Obviously the big teams around us all 1-2, but we kind of expect that at this point as well. It's early in the season that it does our goal difference a world of good. You know, we've had, you know, a few low scoring games this season. So the Bournemouth game and this game, you know, really, really, really help. Big week though ahead, West Ham. How much would you, just on the West Ham game, I wrote out my lineup because I was thinking about it. I don't usually write lineups for games, but for this one, I was thinking, maybe I can think about it a little bit. Just wondered, would you heavily rotate, or would you prioritise midweek a little bit? Would you like to see some of the first choice players? Where would you place it in your priorities?
From memory, after seeing what you wrote down, I think I'll go with that. So if you wanted to have a quick shout out with those players, just before you do that, Jack, I want to mention one thing about the game.
Yes.
Ben White's effort was superb, by the way. It was a great save. That was a really
good effort. From the edge of the area.
Yeah, it was a really good effort. So I just wanted to mention him as well. But yeah, your lineup. I think I agreed with it.
Yeah, my lineup, just to reiterate, my lineup was Ramsdale in goal, obviously. I actually put the back four that I think he'll play. I'd love to get White a rest, but I'm not really seeing how we do it with the way I was saying it. So I think he'll go White, Tommy, Gabriel, Kivior. Though I do think there might be an interest of does he use Zinchenko, because I don't expect Zinchenko to start the weekend. So do you use him midweek? Do you not? I don't know. I'll go Jorginho at the base, but wouldn't be surprised to see Elneny with him or instead of him, because I think Jorginho has a good chance of starting away at Newcastle as well. I'll go Vieira, Smith Rowe, Nelson, Havertz at the nine, because I think he's going to start, isn't he, now against Newcastle. So, and he's played a lot of minutes this season, Eddie, so get him some rest there. I think he's going to play Havertz in midfield, to be honest, but I'd like to see Havertz at the nine, and then Trossard on the left wing, who probably was unlucky to not start against Sheffield United, to be honest, Trossard. And I think that's a solid team. I think West Ham will go strong because they you know, prioritise cups in the recent years, haven't they, really? I mean, and I think my dad mentioned it to me. He went, Jack, I think it's almost certain the three or four teams that are going to go down this season already. And I said, yeah, you might be right, you know, in sort of, you know, Sheffield United and one or two others. He said, I wonder what that means to the teams that would usually be around the bottom half. Will they play more expansively? Because they almost don't think there's a risk of, because there's three or four teams that look so bad. And I went, oh, that's quite interesting. Hopefully that works to our benefit and people actually come out of their deep block a little bit more. Because, you know, who cares if you finish 15th or 11th, you know? Do you know what I mean? Like that kind of stuff. But I don't know if that'll be true, but I think West Ham will go pretty strong, personally. They don't have a lot of... Okay. I mean, they do have Europe, though. They do have Europe, and they had a tough loss yesterday, didn't they, at home to Everton. But I think they'll go pretty strong for it. They don't... Yeah, I expect they'll kind of prioritise the League Cup a little bit more than us. And I think it's a difficult... It's a tricky fixture for us, really, in the sense that we will rotate heavily. So I don't have huge expectations, really, on midweek. I'd just like to see these sort of players that are on the cusp of the first team get a really good performance in. I certainly don't think I see a Sago Jr. like inclusion for this one. You know, that youngster's popped in there. Maybe they're in the squad, but I don't think I see it in the first 11, to be honest. But maybe in the squad. And then obviously it's Newcastle away, which is a massive game, massive game. So what's your predictions, Neil, before we go for West Ham away and Newcastle away? What's your predictions in your first score?
I think given the lineup that you just cited there for Wednesday, there's no reason that on paper we shouldn't do anything but a win. I think that West Ham are going to be tough. It's a London derby and it's a cup game. It's not going to be easy, but I think we've got a good record against them. We always have had. And that is including in the cups as well. And so I'll go for a, oh gosh, score wise it's difficult, but I'll say 3-1. Given that we're going to tinker with the defence a little bit, I'll go. No, I'm going to go for a clean sheet. Believe it or not, I'm going to go 3-0. I'm going to be bold. I know it's their ground, isn't it? I don't know. I think we'll do all right. I think it's. I'm going to really put my faith in Emil Smith Rowe to shine. I really am. And I really want him to. I think he's going to make a massive difference. And who knows, if Havertz does play that role that you suggested, it might be perfect for him. Let's see. I'm going to go 3-0. And I'll be, goal scoring, 3-0 Trossard. 3-0 Trossard for Wednesday. Is it Wednesday? Yeah, it's Wednesday.
Yeah, Wednesday.
The Newcastle game. Oh God, that's a different kettle of fish. Again, I hate doing draws and I hate never do a loss. I'll never do a loss. Hate doing draws. I'd like to think we're going to win, but I will take a draw. To be fair, I will take it because it is I think it's going to be a really tough game. However, they have got a tricky European tie, haven't they? A few days after.
Oh, after, yes. And they play Man U away in the week.
Right. Well then. So that could fall into our favour, maybe. So I'll go 2-1 for Newcastle, and I'll say I think it sounds really stupid, but I think Saka needs a goal, so I'm going to go 2-1 Saka Newcastle.
Yeah, I think he does need a goal. Okay, I'll go 2-1 midweek. Maybe we'll sneak it. Maybe I'll go Trossard as well. Actually, I was going to say Trossard for that one, okay. And I'll go 3-2 then. I'll go 3-2 Newcastle. Oh, can we nick it that way? And I'll go Odegaard. He's been carrying a little hip injury. Mikel Arteta mentioned after the game. He was in the squad, but he's been carrying a little hip injury for the last few weeks. Might have something to do with he's been a little off form the last few weeks, but hopefully we rest him midweek. I don't see any need to really include him in the squad either midweek, to be honest. Get him a full rest and hopefully he's back starting. I think it will be against Newcastle, to be honest, because that's going to be a big game, isn't it? Really big game. So, I mean, a lot of my focus is on that one, to be honest. I never really know how to feel about the League Cup, but but if you can rotate the team like that and get a win, I'm obviously you
perfect. Win.
Perfect, yeah. But the likes of the players that, you know, you're looking at, can they get themselves into this first 11? Trossard, Smith Rowe, you know, people like that. I'd love to see them perform. So, yeah.
Can I just mention, and we have to mention it, what an outstanding performance as it transpired against Sevilla, because that was potentially a very difficult game, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Plus, we were under pressure from after what happened with Lons. And I felt that was a really good performance to win against the side. You guys had mentioned, I didn't know that because I don't really follow the other leagues and stuff, but they'd given Real Madrid a real good run for their money. In fact, they were probably unlucky not to get a result, you guys were saying. And yeah. Right.
They drew 1-1.
Exactly.
And they could have won it.
Yeah. So to go there And we've got just that Jesus, and I mean, the goal, the assist for the goal and his goal.
Yeah, fantastic.
That's why it hurts, that straight after that he's injured. It's just like, why?
Yeah.
It really hurts.
He was there really cheering Eddie on. I saw him in the locker room after the game. I presume it's relatively minor, but minor still doesn't mean he'll be back for Newcastle, because hamstring injuries don't necessarily clear up that quickly. I mean, it'd be fantastic to see him in the group, but I'm not really expecting it at this point. But Arteta's been pretty vague on you know, time frames and stuff like that. But yeah, great performance. You're right, Neil. It was really, pressure was on, and it still is a little bit. But, you know, you're now sitting top of the group. There was a draw in the other game. I think you got two home games to come. So if you can win both of those, you're there, aren't you? And then you can relax for the final game, but you've got to take those seriously and win the first one, first of all. But yeah, like you said, it puts us in a really good position. Whereas at Newcastle, they got beaten at home after a great performance against PSG. So now their group is truly the group of death. I mean, everyone's just all over there, all over the place. And they've still got to go away twice, I believe. So that's, you know, it's tough for them. And whilst we have injuries, they have a couple too. They, you know, Isaac is in the sort of similar boat to Jesus with an injury they haven't really given a time frame on. And then I think they lost Murphy to a shoulder injury, maybe a shoulder dislocation. So I don't think he would be back unless he's made a dramatic recovery. And he's one of their wide players that is quite good. So, but obviously they've got a pretty big squad, so they have players there to come in. But fingers crossed, Neil, hoping for two wins this week. Been a great week so far this week. Let's have more of the same next week. We're at Purely Arsenal FP on Twitter. You can follow us on YouTube, subscribe to our channel, Purely Arsenal. We do one podcast a week at a minimum, usually. We're really good about that so far this season. We should try to keep it up. Give us a subscription on YouTube, ad-free. Just click on it. Doesn't cost you anything. And then you'll get the podcast before they're released anywhere else. And Neil, thanks so much for coming on.
Hello.
Up the Arsenal, mate.
Come on.
Big week ahead. Here we go.